Our agenda is here. Today on the agenda, we've got to discuss our face-to-face meeting, what's happening there. Something was raised on linked data signatures, or Nate raised a good item on linked data signatures, so we should cover that a bit. And I think we need to prepend something to the agenda. I got feedback from Wendy Seltzer just an hour or so ago. And I know that Dave Crocker, you spoke with Wendy at IETF and have some feedback from her there as well. So it would be good for us to push that to the front of the agenda so that we can kind of figure out what we're doing for the face-to-face meeting.
Is the IRC working?
It should be, yeah. I'm seeing stuff. Is anyone else not seeing stuff?
Just getting it temporarily down. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, David. I didn't see that you had added to asked to add two items to the agenda, expiry time of credentials and definitions of user-centric and privacy-enhancing. So we'll add those to, let's add those before linked data signatures, if you don't mind, Nate.
That's fine.
Okay. All right, and Dave Crocker, everyone's saying that the IRC is working for them, so I don't know if it's something with your connection or if you can use another client, IRC client, to connect.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, first up is feedback from Wendy Seltzer. So Wendy is the domain lead for this activity. She has to be more or less okay with the charter before we put it forward to a vote. She has provided some high-level feedback. It's kind of the same stuff that we've been hearing from her for a while, but it's, I think she's phrased it in a way that may allow us to make some changes to the charter. To be clear, she hasn't made specific suggestions on changes to the charter. She's just raised the general concern. So I'm going to try and summarize this for the group and then ask if I can share her feedback, share her email with the broader group later. So here we go. The high-level point is that she feels that the problem statement is too overarching. So let me try and bring up this link to this so that everyone has a link to the charter. So problem. Okay, so she's specifically talking about this. So she's saying the problem statement is too overarching. And the reason she's saying that, again, I think she makes good points. We just need to figure out how we're going to address those. She says that we claim, the problem statement is we're saying that, let me step back. Usually in a problem statement in a W3C charter, you expect that when the working group is done, that problem will be solved. And she's asserting that there are multiple things that we say in the problem statement that are kind of more visionary statements rather than once the working group is done, this problem will be solved. She says in the problem statement, we say that we assert that there is no currently widely used self-sovereign and privacy-enhancing standard for expressing and transacting verifiable claims. She's taking issue with the word widely used because after we're done, we can't claim that whatever we come up with is going to be widely used. So she's pushing back on that. She's also saying that, if the scope of work is a vocabulary and data format, that does not include the protocol piece. That does not include transacting. So we are not specifying how this information passes back and forth. We do call out to potentially integrating these claims into existing protocols like OpenID Connect or OAuth2 or SAML. But she's basically saying you're not talking about transacting and you're not talking about actually creating a transaction mechanism. If there was a protocol that we were proposing, that would be different. But since we're not doing that, we can't say that we're going to deliver on transacting verifiable claims. She also took issue with the word verifying. Nothing is verifying the verifiable, she said. So she said there's a big difference between this data has a valid signature, and therefore I know something more about the data. I'm going to try and dig in a bit deeper on that to see exactly what change she'd like to see out of that. But I think the general point is we're saying that there's a mechanism to do a digital signature on this data and verify the digital signature, but that doesn't mean that the data is valid. But again, that's kind of a guess on my part. She's also asserting that there's substantial infrastructure that is still required to make self-sovereign meaningful. So she's saying that if we're successful with achieving the goals, if we finish what we say we're going to do in the charter, we still don't have a self-sovereign ecosystem because we need more infrastructure. And then finally, she's saying that there is no assurance that the claims would be used in a privacy-enhancing manner. Specifically, she's saying because we're using identifiers, they can be linked and can be used in a privacy-invasive manner. Okay, so those are the issues she found with the problem statement. She found the same kind of issues with the goals, meaning that the goals are broader than necessary. She feels that the goals are broader than necessary to get shared commitment. So she'd like us to narrow the goals down. Trying to read through the email to summarize the other stuff. And she's also saying she doesn't quite understand how service provider independence would work with the mechanism that we're proposing. So we're going to have a discussion with her on that. And then again, regarding cross-industry support, she's asserting that she doesn't see how we can develop vocabularies for industries that don't participate in the standardization work. I think there's still this misconception, although we're slowly clearing it up with Microsoft, that we are going to tell the world how they assert whether or not someone got a particular degree or whether or not they're over the age of 18. What we're creating is a data format that allows them to express those things, but each industry vertical can define their own vocabulary to do that. I think that point is being missed in the charter, so we'll try and figure that stuff out with Wendy. And so basically she's saying she has scope concerns. Some of these questions that she raised we can answer pretty quickly. Some of them we'll have to craft new language to see if that works for her. And she said she's still waiting for further feedback on the JWT interaction, so Jose JWT, and whether or not it's conflicting or complementary work to what we're doing here. We are in active discussions with folks from Microsoft to try and work through some of these issues as well. Let me stop there. And I know Dave Crocker, you spoke with Wendy a bit as well. So if you could give us kind of a summary of that discussion, that would be helpful.
Sure. This was at the IETF meeting in Berlin a couple weeks ago. The discussion was reasonably brief. In my brain, I synthesized it down to two items, and frankly, they were both related. One clarified the suggestion to focus on the education vertical, which from the discussions that have happened here didn't make a whole lot of sense. She made the comment that was recommended because that's where the effort had gotten support in the discussions that she was part of. I can't judge the accuracy of that assessment, but it's certainly a straightforward one to understand. The other, which was more general but also related, was that she wasn't seeing a depth of support that would encourage one to believe that this would get adopted once the work was done. Again, I can't judge the accuracy of that assessment, but I certainly think it's the kind of assessment that is extremely valid and extremely important in the standards arenas around the world. Efforts like these and many others often get started because a few people are enthusiastic, but they don't really develop enough industry support. And being able to show a high likelihood of meaningful implementation once the work is done just makes a profound difference in the nature of the work that gets done, because people who want to adopt it are part of the discussion, and being able to sell the validity of the work by being able to show that there's people in the real world who want to adopt it. So it takes it out of here's a cool idea into here's a bunch of people who want this cool idea. It's a different discussion.
Right. Thanks, Dave. So one of the issues I have with, you know, that comment from Wendy is we went to quite a bit of trouble to document the organizations that have said they're going to implement. So these are the organizations that say they're going to implement, right? So there. And as far as industry support, we went, again, to a lot of trouble to demonstrate that there is industry support. So I'm wondering if she feels like that's not enough. And if so, that's very confusing to me, because we've had other initiatives that we've been involved with at W3C that has had far less industry support than this, and it's started. So we'll have to follow up with Wendy on those two fronts. Dave, I mean, you know, I feel like we've answered that question over and over again. So either Wendy hasn't seen those two links, or those are not enough. Those are not convincing.
Right. And as I said, I can't judge that. I've known her casually for a long time, but I haven't interacted with her enough to have a meaningful personal assessment. In general, my superficial assessment is she seems to worry about pragmatics. Whether I agree with those or not is a separate issue, but she seems to focus on those rather than, for example, playing political games. But I don't know that for a fact. My experience with these kinds of situations is that they need a sit-down dialogue between the proponents and opponents, and they need to thrash it through in a serious bit of time with real-time interaction, and that these kinds of differences in perception or beliefs don't get resolved through email. They don't get resolved through sort of iterative transactions. They need a sit-down.
Yeah, I agree with that, Dave. We've been trying to get that sit-down for a very long time, and Wendy's very, very busy and has not been able to find the time today. The first significant one we had was at the Web Payments IG meeting, and she has been responsive. It only took her a week to get back to us on her thoughts on this. So my hope is that we'll be able to have that sit-down soon. We are certainly having that sit down with Microsoft right now, so that's good. And things are not as dire as they seemed, 2 weeks ago with Microsoft specifically. So we'll see what comes out of that. Okay.
So
all this.
Go ahead. Can I ask Google? Has there been any progress with Google?
No, there hasn't. Still need to do that. It's a bandwidth problem. We haven't had the bandwidth to engage them.
Who's the contact at Google?
Well, Chris Wilson is the one that raised the issue. It's unclear whether Chris, and he raised it mainly on process issues. So it's unclear whether or not Chris has actually spoken with their identity team internally. So if anyone knows the Google identity team internally or knows a good contact there, it would be really good to be put in contact with them. And if not, I can just ask Chris, and hopefully he'll let us know. The thinking right now is that if Microsoft withdraws their objection, Google will probably follow suit, begrudgingly, but, you know, they'll basically say, well, we're not going to stand in the way. We don't like this, but we won't stand in the way of this. But clearly, ideally, we want both of them to say, this is great stuff. We want to be involved. So to close the loop on that, we're gonna try and get in touch with Google, given our available bandwidth. But we're stretched so fantastically thin right now, so it might not happen for another 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. It's just that we seem to have lost the connection at the moment.
No, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. No, I was just thinking that perhaps Google's opposition is slightly different to Microsoft, because Google is an existing large-scale IDP that knows who's contacting which services and when, and will lose that with the verifiable claims. Then maybe their objection is more from that business aspect rather than any technical aspect.
That may be the case, but if it is, that's not what they said on the phone and in their email communication. So that may be what's happening behind the scenes, but I kind of doubt it. They usually are a bit more straightforward when that's the case. Especially Google, at least we haven't seen them actively oppose work that competes with one of their business units in that way. So I believe that Chris Wilson is being fairly forthright in that he is saying this is a process issue. We want it to be incubated more. I believe he believes that. Chris usually doesn't play, you know, political games like that. But I think that it's certainly worth bearing that in mind, David.
Okay, thank you.
Shane, you're on the queue. And maybe muted.
I was muted. I'm sorry. I was just going to say I can reach out to them. I've got cycles. I don't sleep.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you, Shane. Chris Wilson, you know him?
Of course.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Okay. Anything else? Any other questions about where we are with the discussions with W3C management and Microsoft and Google?
Yeah, Manu, this is Nate. Do we have a current plan to revise the problem statement text? Is that an action that we're going to try and take over the next week, or are we looking for more information first?
Yes, I'm going to try and take a hack at it, primarily because I'm unfortunately the only one that's been in touch with all of these people. And I think I know what they want to see, and I think I know what the group is okay with putting in the charter. So I'm going to take a cut at it and see where we can get and put it up as a draft alternative. I'm not going to replace the document. I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to try and work on something that I think Wendy and Microsoft and Google will say okay to, and then bring it back to the group and see if the group agrees with that stuff. And it's probably going to be a fairly aggressive set of changes, which is, you know, unfortunate, but okay if the group is okay with going forward in that way. So, yes, Nate, to answer your question, I'm hoping to get to that at some point this week or over the weekend.
That sounds good. Good luck.
to note that we're probably not going to have a meeting next week unless someone else wants to run the meeting. I'm going to be on a plane. Okay, any other questions or concerns about the charter and Wendy's feedback and things of that nature?
Manu, sorry I didn't put myself on the queue. I just wanted to remind you that I do have a discussion with Microsoft on Thursday at 4 p.m.
Great, fantastic, thank you. Can you, I don't know how much you can elaborate on that discussion, and it's different than the discussions I've been having with Microsoft as well.
Well, I don't know how much elaboration I can do. I've known, you know, Mike Champion and I have worked together for years, and so his, you know, at the end of the day, nobody has a crystal ball, and nobody knows if this is actually going to work. And I, you know, I think that some of the objections are probably things like, you know, making a complicated set of, you know, ongoing standards or under construction standards worse by adding another one. It's kind of a specious argument. What it leaves out is that none of those activities may be adequate. And I think that was part of what the group did, was try to look at those and see what was going to work. So one particular angle I want to explore with Mike, which, and I'm sending you a request for an audience before I have this discussion, just because I want to get your take on a couple things. But if I know Microsoft cares about ISO, I know they care about X9, and I know that the people involved from the Petro side and from the payment side are pretty disenchanted with cryptography specs as they apply to payments specifically. And so even if you look at the ISO X9 way of doing things, it's like there are things missing. To be quite honest, it may come up that the WG that is being proposed will define the choreographies and possibly the data model, and will then step back and give the requirements to one of these specialty groups to actually create the PKI structure or whatever is required. So I want to leave some of those doors open, but I would like to talk to you before my call with Mike, so watch for my email.
Okay. Thanks, David. Sounds good. So all that to say, this is we're actively working the problem and trying to find common ground with these other organizations and W3C staff.
I wanted to follow up specifically on that. At Microsoft, Microsoft is doing a variety of things related to blockchain and initiatives there. In particular, Daniel Buchner, B-U-C-H-N-E-R, is working with the Blockstack people on, bringing one name, Blockstack technology into some of the things that Microsoft is working on. And as I understand it, he is working with, the Seven Laws of Identity.
Kim Cameron.
Yes, Kim Cameron's in his group and such. And I know that Blockstack is, planning on using verified credentials and in fact is going to be using JSON-LD and some other things. So, obviously that's a, new group at Microsoft but I think they put a lot of importance into blockchain stuff. So I don't know if whoever's speaking to Microsoft may want to bring up the name that there is a group at Microsoft who is interested in this.
Thank you, Christopher, and that's absolutely right. So there are three touch points at Microsoft that we're talking to right now. David Azell is talking with Mike Champion, who's their AC rep. I've spoken with Anthony Natalin, who's the primary person that has raised the objection, and Anthony is a longtime ex-IBM guy in identity and now one of the heads of identity at Microsoft. And then there's Kim Cameron, who is the overarching identity czar at Microsoft. I think Mike Champion's kind of on the fence. He doesn't have an opinion other than reflecting, you know, making sure that this thing has a chance of being successful. Anthony Natalin has historically taken the position against this, but the latest discussion we've had with him has kind of turned that around a bit, and he didn't seem as opposed to the work. And then Kim Cameron, as Christopher said, his group is actively looking at this verifiable claims stuff. So, you know, there isn't one opinion inside Microsoft. I think they're trying to get up to speed and get a high-level position on this stuff. And I think it's slowly moving away from opposed to either let's let it run its course and see if it works about the verifiable claim stuff, or let's get more involved because this seems like something that we're going to need in some part of Microsoft. So those are the three, you know, people primarily, and their subsequent groups that we're talking to inside of Microsoft. Okay, anything else on discussions? Okay, let's move on to the next topic then, which is the verifiable claims face-to-face agenda. There's a link to a draft one we put together here. So based on the most recent feedback, I doubt we're going to be able to do something for TPAC. The timing is just not going to work out. We're not going to be able to call a vote at W3C, the vote run its course and close, and have a meeting at TPAC. I think the most we can hope for is just kind of a if the vote is open right before TPAC, we can invite a lot of W3C members to come in and participate in the discussion and see if their organizations want to participate, bring them up to speed about what the work's about, things of that nature. And I think we've asked the Web Payments IG for a block of time to do that during the latter part of W3C TPAC. So then the question is, what are we doing for our first face-to-face meeting? There's an opportunity to hang the face-to-face meeting off of the Internet Identity Workshop that's happening at the end of October in Silicon Valley. I forget exactly where. It's in the Computer History Science Museum there. So the idea would be to have an attached working group meeting on the last day of IIW and then the following day after IIW. And the purpose for that is to get that community engaged in the work if they want to get engaged, right? So right now, and we've floated the idea very briefly past Phil Windley, saying that we're thinking of doing this, but stay tuned. We don't know exactly what's happening yet. But given the schedule, I think that's the most reasonable plan we could have for a face-to-face meeting. So the upside here is that whether the working group happens or not, we can probably do something at IIW, right? So that's the good news. The bad news is that we're going to have to plan all of it ourselves and pay for it ourselves. And we don't know what the cost for that is. So we'd be looking for sponsors and things of that nature for the day after. And we don't even know if there's space right now, so we need to figure that out. So it's basically attached it to IIW, or we don't have a meeting. We don't have a face-to-face meeting this year. Let me stop there and see what folks feel about that. This would be October 27th and 28th, I believe. It's the 27th and the 28th. Go ahead, Christopher. You're on the queue.
Sure. So there's been a lot of, you know, so right now we have scheduled for the end of September the rebooting Web of Trust. And however, it is, we've had enough people that are critical, including yourself, Matt, who feel like they won't be able to make that meeting in the end of September. And we have a, I'd hope to make the event a 3-day event, and we have a problem with the first day venue. So we've been talking about moving it to the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday before IIW, and Microsoft has said the space is available, for that. And in fact, it is Daniel Buchner who is saving us the space. We haven't yet confirmed that change because we've had, you know, 10 or so people pay and commit to the event in September, and we're kind of polling them to find out, since they've paid, what their commitments are and such. But given what I was just saying about Daniel Buchner's interest and given that he said that, you know, there was space available at Microsoft, you know, maybe you should, you know, contact him about that, and then that will take care of a lot of your, you know, pretty much everything except your catering costs, I think. So
that's
just wanted to throw,
point.
You know, throw
yeah,
that out there.
Very good point. So I will take an action to contact Daniel and ask him. We're a bit concerned about asking Microsoft for space given their position on the work right now. But certainly all options are on the table right now. So we'll reach out to Daniel and see.
As I said, Daniel's sort of on the other side there. So it's a
right.
demonstration that at least part of Microsoft is interested. Does this change, you know, you're going to still be going to TPAC. There just won't be a verifiable claims meeting or vote there.
There will be probably two verifiable claims events, one of them on the Wednesday as a breakout session to just give everyone an update of where we are. We typically do that. And then on during the Web Payments IG meeting, we might do another one for those that couldn't make it on the Wednesday, or to specifically talk about charter questions that W3C members may have.
Okay. I'm just trying to, you know, rate my my attendance on, because this is literally the only topic I'm, you know, that concerned about for TPAC purposes. So. So I'm trying to judge, you know, do I go to Lisbon for two, 1-hour meetings, of which we're only part of the meeting. So,
unfortunately it would have been ideal to just have a verifiable claims working group meeting face-to-face at TPAC in Lisbon. That would have been ideal, but because this thing is moving so slowly through W3C management and Google and Microsoft, it's not, I don't think it's a realistic plan at this point.
Okay.
David, you're on the queue, as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, as we are building this agenda for TPAC, Manu, you should go to the page and I am put it down as a possible session. I think you should put it down as a definite session.
I thought he said he didn't want anything down as definite sessions right now, so I didn't move
well,
it
that
over.
Well, doesn't mean. Well, let's put it this way: if you put your name by it, that makes it a lot more definite than if it
Got
doesn't
it.
Have your name.
I will. So,
And because I'm working with the guys from Europe for things like PSD2, Christopher, I don't know if that sort of thing interests you. There are a number of topics that come up in Europe that sometimes when our European members aren't there, they don't come up. And I'm trying to, don't minute this, I'm trying to beat the bushes to get people to bring topics to the table they want to talk about. So, Manu, let's talk about that later this week. And Christopher, if you have any other topics for the IG that you that would make the trip more worthwhile, just let me know.
Yeah, I'd be glad to talk further. So, I did.
Because I know I had an action to talk to you about emerging markets, and I actually took an action at the last meeting, and I don't know if a discussion or a session on that would be of interest. So just please let me know if there's anything I can do.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so does anyone have a problem with that proposal to try to shift the face-to-face meeting to IIW and just commit to that, whether or not the group has been formed by that point or not? I know Nate said you're not going to be able to come because you're going to be at MozFest. Would anybody else be completely out for those dates?
This is Dave Crocker. I will. I'll be at MOG in Paris.
Okay. Okay, so it sounds like we're going to lose two people by doing that.
There was also the Friday, but I'd be willing to relinquish the Friday before IIW instead of the Friday after. Does that make a difference for people?
I could probably. This is Dave Crocker. I could probably adjust to making. You're saying the 21st.
Yes.
Right. I could probably do that. I'd need to know pretty soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Christopher. That's actually really interesting. So we would do it that Friday and Saturday, and then people might stay over for IIW?
Yeah.
Oh, Friday and Saturday.
I thought it was a one-day event also. I didn't realize that the agenda was 2 days.
Well, usually face-to-face meetings are 2 days. But you know what, Christopher? I think it would be best to just attach it to the end of IIW, meaning ideally we'd have it in the same space so that if people are interested, they can pop in for, two or three hours and then jump out. I think we should still probably try for 27th and 28th. And again, all this is subject to change. If there's no venue, we can't do it. But I'll try and work it through with Phil Windley. I'll keep you in the loop on that, Christopher, just to make sure that we're not accidentally stomping on each other's events.
Okay.
Okay. And then, Christopher, I don't know what the Paris event is.
That's, unless there's something else, that's MOG, the anti-abuse group.
Okay. Okay, then we're going to kind of march forward with that plan in mind to do the face-to-face at around IIW, probably the 27th and 28th, towards the end there. Any other concerns, questions about face-to-face meeting? Okay, 20 minutes. David Chadwick, you had raised two things that you were concerned about. One of them had to do with terminology, and the other one had to do with credential revocation or just expiration. So let's topic this as terminology and expiration. Would you mind giving us an intro to your thoughts, David?
Sure. I'm actually writing a paper at the moment about verifiable claims and about an implementation we've done. And the key point that was made in the documentation is that verifiable claims are user-centric and privacy-enabling. And then when you go to the glossary, you don't actually find them defined anywhere. So I think we ought to, given that that's the sort of rationale for having them, that they're user-centric and privacy-enabled, then we go to the glossary, there ought to be a definition of what we mean by those terms. So in the email, I just threw out a couple of starters, straw men, for those definitions and then would like them to be refined and put into the glossary.
Excellent point. We have definitions in the charter here that I think everyone agreed to previously. You're absolutely right. We should have those in the glossary. I don't know how those didn't get in there. We have definitions for these right now. If you could look at those definitions and see if you agree with them or if you feel like they should be changed, that would be good to know.
I'll take a look then. Are they immediately obvious in the charter?
We've got there's terminology. A section that says terminology, and that's where we define them. Is that what you meant by immediately obvious?
Yeah, I mean, I would have expected in bold to see privacy enhancing. Yeah, okay, and it's not there. So I would expect the key terms to be there, then with the definition of the key terms.
Got it. Okay. Dave Longley, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that I think that we intentionally stopped using the term user-centric because it has a variety of different meanings and it was confusing. And we adopted self-sovereign in replace of that, and so that one's there. Privacy enhancing is not, so we might, I remember we had some discussions about how much we wanted to get into talking about that. But that is true. User-centric is understood in a different way in other communities, like the OpenID and OpenID Connect communities. And I think we in general want to just move away from that terminology and embrace something else and talk about the properties related to that other thing instead of trying to use the term user-centric.
That's fair enough. I mean, I see nothing wrong with having the term user-centric and then define it in your document what you mean by it because it's the context of verifiable claims. But to have it as a term and not define it leads to the problem you're raising, that many different people have many different ideas of what it means. So either you have the term and you define it, or you replace the term with another one.
Right. Yeah, so I think our goal is to completely replace it.
So this is Dave Crocker. Let me recommend against using the term with a new definition. It's a term that is reasonably well entrenched in a number of communities, and coming up with a definition that doesn't match any of those is just really inviting a confused reader. So this is a case of doing something that's mathematically correct. You provide the definition, but it isn't behaviorally correct.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yes. And then Christopher Allen's on the queue.
Yeah, I'm sort of responding to more the privacy question, and maybe this is jumping ahead to the other agenda item where some privacy et cetera issues were being brought up. I'm actually kind of hoping that we can defer some of the identifier and confidentiality issues a little bit because, to a certain extent, I need the format in some ways to be able to really be able to then dive deeper in another round in a 2.0 or a 1.5 or whatever we decide where we basically do add in privacy requirements. So, are we saying now that we're offering some specific privacy requirements, or are we simply making it easier in the future for them to be added? Am I clear in that?
Yes, crystal clear. We're saying the latter. I think we've boiled it down to privacy has a lot to do with the identifiers that are used in the verifiable claims. If the identifier is not a privacy-enhancing identifier, for example, something that's randomly generated for each transaction, then it is not privacy-enhancing, right? So if you have a an identifier that is incredibly long-lived and ties a whole bunch of stuff together, that is a, you know, you that allows linking. If you have an identifier that is regenerated on every single transaction, then the hope is, as long as you don't have personally identifiable information, then that is a privacy-enhancing identifier. And that is the approach that we've taken, which is, let's not do this in version 1.0. We can do it in version 2.0 as long as we are very aware of what enhances privacy in these verifiable claims and what does not enhance privacy in these verifiable claims.
Right. I think in many cases these things, you know, aren't even the, you know, the data. It's when we, you know, if when we move to a transaction API or whatever, where a lot of this type of stuff happens. Anyhow, I didn't know if that. You know, moving things forward, you know, have we made it sufficiently clear that this is a undefined future thing? The main thing we're trying to do is just simply have signed claims in a format that allows us some flexibility for the future. I mean,
Yep. I put myself on the queue to time. Sorry, we put myself on the queue to time box. We have 10 minutes left, and I want to try to get to Nate's item. So, David, really quickly, could you cover the expiration issue?
Yeah, so we had a lot of discussion on the list a while back now about expiration time, but nothing really came of it. I thought that there was a sort of tentative agreement to add expiration time into the definition of credentials, but it never happened. So I'm raising it again because I think it's important that all verifiable credentials have an expiration time for one of two reasons, either because the credential itself has a natural expiration, such as an annual membership card or something like that, or even if it doesn't, the crypto that it's based on would naturally expire, and therefore it would need to have some expiration because of that. But there is no expiration time currently in the definition that we've got.
Correct. So there isn't a mention of expiration in the definition, but the spec, it's all over the spec. So we have expiration issued times, expiration times for keys and the credentials themselves. So I think your specific ask is to make that clear in the definition.
Yeah, and to make, you know, to make the expiration time a mandatory component of the credential, as is the ID and as is the claim.
Right. So you're seeing Nate here on IRC saying he doesn't think that expiration should be a mandatory property of a credential, meaning it's up to the market vertical to decide whether or not it should go in the credential or not. That is typically where the group has landed. That said, I don't think we've seen any one model, any verifiable claim that did not have some form of expiration. Either the expiration is explicitly stated in the data for the credential, or the key has a clear expiration date.
Exactly. That's my point.
Right. Okay. So let's take this discussion to the mailing list to derive the actual language we end up either putting in the definition or into the spec. Again, I don't think there's misalignment on intention, David, other than the mandatory property you're talking about. I think we've always intended this stuff to expire in the general case.
Okay.
All right. We have 8 minutes left. Let's jump to the linked data. Let's see, encrypted. Let's call them encrypted signatures. Nate, why don't you introduce the topic, please?
Cool, thank you. And please let me know if my audio drops out. I think I am on slightly unreliable Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So this topic came about because I was reading the use cases document, and one statement that had gotten put in there was that no use case yet requires the participation of the actual subject of the claim. And if we're saying something is a user-centric architecture or self-sovereign architecture, it seems kind of like a strange misalignment to say that the recipient or the subject of the claim, the subject of the claim in sharing the records of their learning in some cases with inspectors, and in fact that any holder of that claim could share the record with anyone that the holder liked, including with people that the subject of the claim does not want to know about their own private information. I proposed a possible mechanism that would be optional, a component of a spec that would allow a recipient and an issuer, a subject and a recipient, a subject and an issuer to together collaborate to decide specific inspectors who are able to verify the claim, and only those specific inspectors would be able to verify it.
Right. So we had a fairly good discussion with Nate, kind of offline phone discussion to talk about, and on the mailing list, to talk about a mechanism that could be used. And we came up with this concept of an encrypted signature. So you basically encrypt the signature for a particular recipient so that only that recipient can actually read the signature value and verify the data. The point that was raised, though, is exactly what kind of protection does this afford the subject? And that I don't know if we have a good answer for that yet. The upside to this discussion, though, is that we were able to once again demonstrate that the linked data signatures were very flexible. In that, Nate basically said, "Hey, I've got this requirement," and with effectively one field added to the linked data signature, we're able to now support that requirement from a technical perspective. Whether or not, and Christopher, you're absolutely right, that's the signature format that ends up doing that. We were able to extend linked data signatures to support that. But if the goal is to make it so that the receiver of that information can't then misuse it, we don't believe that that's the case. We think that, once the information is known to the inspector, they can do a whole bunch of nasty, nefarious things with it, like forward it to people that were never supposed to receive it, and so on and so forth. So I think, Nate, I think where we left this discussion was we, from a technical perspective, we can achieve this, but let's refine what we're trying to prevent, because we don't think the technical solution still prevents the original thing, which was to try and protect the subject from kind of illicit use of their information. Christopher, you're on go ahead.
Well,
I
just wanted to make it clear, yes, you can't prevent somebody from taking the claim information and passing it on, but you can set it up such that the claim information is not the signature is not valid when you pass it on. So, again, there's a subtle distinction there, but if you're only relying on verified claims as being valid, sure, there's somebody who's, not playing by the rules and they're passing the information on, but then, it is possible to set it up such that none of those are verifiable, so you don't know if they're spamming you or not. So, I don't know. Just be clear that when you're talking about that, there is this element of passing the data forward is one privacy problem. Passing signed data forward that is still valid signatures can be passed forward. So,
right. Yep.
Can I? Because I think with respect, that is not quite the issue, because the issue is about trust, and the signature is there so that you can validate that you really know who sent it and can trust the recipient and that they signed it. Now, if I can't check the signature, but I trust somebody who did check the signature and sent it to me and said, "I checked the signature," and they sign it in a way that I can validate their signature, then I have a chain of trust, and it's really irrelevant the fact that I cannot check the signature because it's encrypted from the person I got it from because I have a trust chain.
Right. Yeah, and that's at the heart of whether or not this is preventing the malicious use that, you know, we had originally intended it to prevent. So I think this is an ongoing discussion. It's not, you know, I don't think we're closing down the discussion on this. It's just something that the group needs to be aware of and we need to discuss further because there may be another mechanism that we can use to make this happen, like blind signatures or Kamenich-Lisinskaya information hiding type signatures. So, those are other options for trying to protect subjects' data. Also, in case people aren't aware, the current protocol that we have, the verifiable claims protocol that we have, which is different from OpenID Connect and SAML and those things, has the subject countersign the claim as it's handed over so that the inspector, when they receive it, they have two signatures on that. One is from the original issuer, and then there's a countersignature from the subject saying that I was in control of this credential when I handed it over to the inspector, so that the inspector knows that it was not, they're not being spammed, or they're not, you know, the thing's not being relayed in through some other device. So there is that mechanism, but even that mechanism doesn't prevent the misuse of information. Okay. Let's see. So, Dave Longley is basically saying we need a clearer use case or attack to try and figure out what might work for this. What technical solution might work for this? All right, we're out of time for today. Is there anything else high priority that we need to focus on this week and next week that didn't come up during the call? Next week's call is canceled. Okay, if not, that's the call for today. Thank you, everyone, for the lively discussion. We'll meet again in 2 weeks. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.